Well, I think this might be the earliest I've ever recorded, actually, but it is well worth it to accommodate this guest who has been an intrepid road warrior of late, but glad we're getting a chance to sit down with Mark Stein. How are you?
I feel for you, man, because this is early for me, and you're 2 hours ahead of me, 2 hours behind me on the West Coast. Apologies.
All right, well,
apologies that my schedule is so crazy.
Well, the good news is I have an excuse of being a little punchy for the stupid stuff that I probably would have just said normally anyway. So
we'll see if the audience lets you off the hook, Daddy. My guess is not.
we have a forgiving audience. I mean, it's surprising actually. We've made so many errors over the course of, you know, almost 600 episodes now.
You do too many shows. That's error number one. 5 shows a week guarantees that you're going to make mistakes.
Well, the good news is, though, like my in-game tweeting, if I make a mistake, it's one of just like 40 tweets. So, you know, it doesn't get as much attention, thankfully. But so let's get started here. We talked about a week ago of like some things to come up with. And I was like, yeah, you know, there's not that much news after the All-Star break. But we actually came up with a bunch of stuff, and where I wanted to start here is the Derrick Rose era in Chicago. You were at the forefront. I think you might have been the first to report that was likely, and then, you know, it looked like he wasn't going to go there. In fact, Glenn Taylor said, no, we don't have any plans to add anyone, and then lo and behold, the timing was a little odd. A month after he was initially traded and waived, Derrick Rose is now in Minnesota. How did that saga evolve?
It was odd. I think it's fair to say that Tom Thibodeau had great interest in bringing him in from the start. I reported on trade deadline day that when he was dealt to Utah and waived, that Minnesota would try to sign him. And, you know, I think it's safe to say that Tom wanted to. I don't know that there was organizational consensus on that one, I guess we could say. Glenn Taylor came out, and, you know, why Glenn Taylor is talking about personnel, I really don't know, but he does tend to do that. He'll grant interviews once in a while and all of a sudden decide that he has all the answers. And I think it was pretty clear when you listened to Glenn that he had, I don't know, some sort of reservation about it. But it became a deal where Minnesota just, the injuries started stacking up and they needed a guard. And, you know, the Timberwolves jokes are always going to be out there. And Tom takes his fair share of stick, as the English would say, about it. But, you know, they needed a guard. And when you look at who's out there on the free agent market, I don't think it's any surprise that that's who Minnesota went.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a surprise in the sense that, you know, it fits into Tibbs' pattern, both a bull and someone who creates a lot of shots, if not necessarily efficiently, and someone else who is potentially going to take shots out of the hands of Carl Anthony Towns, who, you know, has just been unbelievable these past few games now that they've actually started giving him the ball. But Rose, in his first game, a disastrous stint, negative 17 in 7 minutes, a stint that almost ended up costing the game. And then in his second game in Washington, it does what he'll do a lot of times, where he's either got like go create for Derrick Rose mode, or he's got what he considers to be true point guard mode, which is kind of just stand around and throw passes and not really do anything, which is a little bit more what we saw. But that at least didn't actively hurt the team against Washington. But, you know, you mentioned Taylor. I mean, do you think that there is any kind of a disconnect there? Like, how do we get from the owner saying, hey, we're not going to sign this guy, to them signing him a month later after this weird delay?
I don't think there's a grand disconnect. I mean, look, the Wolves have done really well this season, and they've been out of the playoffs for 13 years. They're playing without Butler now. They're still going to get in, barring some sort of crazy collapse. You know, they've picked up a couple big wins here recently, which they needed to kind of get through this period. I think Butler's back before the end of the season, and, you know, I would like to. I think Tom has done a really good job with a team that hasn't won in more than a decade, and I kind of think when Butler gets back, the focus is going to return more to, wow, we're actually in the playoffs for the first time in 13 years. So I put it down more to Taylor's, I don't know if wackiness is the right word, but I've always found, yeah, you know, throughout his ownership tenure, he's had me scratching my head on many occasions. There were a lot of times I didn't think he was decisive enough. Let me just politely say, I've never been a huge fan of his ownership style. So why he's even giving interviews and talking about personnel like that is just, that's the weird part to me.
So one thing that we didn't talk about, but just some very light rumblings yesterday, Darren Wolfson out of there on the radio said basically that he heard through teammates that Andrew Wiggins isn't that happy being a third option, which led Danny and me to joke that he's lucky he's not the fourth option when you got Jimmy Butler and Karl Towns, and Wiggins hasn't been particularly efficient this year, and they've got another creator in Jeff Teague. Just, I mean, maybe not even necessarily thinking anything that you heard, but just kind of thinking about it, do you think that Andrew Wiggins, you know, a couple of years from now is on this team? Do you think that there's a chance that they might move on from him given how he's played this year?
I think that makes, you know, I think that's something that people will be looking at, and I think other teams will be coming after him because he's at best going to be the third option if you're playing with Butler in town. So I think it's only natural that, you know, whether he's unhappy, content, whether that's all overstated. Look, Darren Wolfson is there in Minnesota. He, you know, I'm sure he has a better feel than you or I for what's happening with that team on a daily basis. So I don't think there's any question that, you know, Wiggins' future is going to be talked about. He's under contract now, so, you know, it's a big number, but for some teams that appeals, you know, that to be able to get a guy with when there is contract certainty and you know you've got him, there will be teams that want to trade for that. So I don't think there's any question that we're going to hear his name come up again and again.
Yeah,
unless something happens in the playoffs where they click and really, you know, it all works. But I mean, can you see him being better than the third option with those other two guys?
I don't either. Although, you know, maybe 3 years from now, or maybe he's still kind of insurance if they move on from Butler, they can't agree on a full max contract for him. If perhaps in part because of the enormous contract that they gave him, they feel they can't afford Wiggins, Butler, and Towns, which, you know, they're going to be facing a luxury tax crunch starting in the summer of 2019 with new contracts for both Butler and Towns on the horizon. So maybe they'll feel like, you know, we lost Jimmy Butler. We couldn't offer him the contract he wanted.
They better work it out with Jimmy Butler. I mean, he's changed the culture there. I mean, Towns is, you know, look, Towns is fantastic, and he is on Team Unicorn for sure. When we, you know, there's so many of these amazing seven-footers that it's hard to keep track of them, and every time I try to reel them off, I always leave one out because I'm getting old and my memory's starting to go, and I can't remember. I mean, he is first team all Unicorn, but Butler is really, I think, changed the dynamic there, and you cannot let him go. They better work whatever needs to be worked out, work it out.
Yeah, no, and maybe that could be part of what leads to this Wiggins trade as well. And I think Wiggins is a guy with his athleticism who, you know, and is young enough, you think there's always going to be at least a market for them to get off of that contract in a neutral way. You know, I don't see them, unless he gets hurt, having to give up assets. And that's the one thing in his favor is his durability. And I think he's a guy, a way for a downtrodden team, if they were to acquire him, to at least sell some hope for the fans. So I would expect, although I think he has not been that positive a player this year and is going to be wildly overpaid unless he makes some very significant improvements, you know, I think he's always going to have his fans at least for a couple more years. All right, let's take a quick break here, and then we got lots more to get to here with Mark Stein right after this. By the time you listen to it, the tournament will be well underway. You never know what's going to happen with all these games, but you better be ready if you're having people over, and make sure your fridge isn't empty by halftime. Swing by Walmart before every round, stock up on Coca-Cola, Coke Zero Sugar, and Powerade, especially Powerade Zero, which is my personal favorite. I drink a lot of those whenever we go skiing because you need to hydrate in the high altitude. Coca-Cola is the official fan refreshment of the NCAA, so be ready to watch all the games by picking up Coca-Cola and Powerade all tourney long. Back when I was a lawyer, I would actually take off the first Thursday and Friday of March Madness to watch all the games. Definitely want to stay hydrated if you're having an adult beverage or two while you're watching said games. And NCAA March Madness isn't just one game. You've got the whole tournament. You better be ready. Refresh every round by heading to Walmart to pick up Coca-Cola, Coke Zero Sugar, and Powerade. So we have had a lot more news. One of the things that's really surprised me, actually, I said we have a lot of news, but there's a little bit of a lack of news. The last time we talked, we thought the buyout market was going to be pretty hot. We did end up seeing Marco Bellinelli, Ersan Ilyasova both end up on the Sixers, which I think it has helped them to get some additional shooting off the bench. But we didn't see guys like maybe a Brook Lopez, who I actually just watched play in person last night for for the Lakers has been good in this run lately, maybe asked to be bought out. Why do you think it was that we didn't see maybe as much movement from buyout guys as might have been expected this year? I thought there were some obvious candidates who, you know, just elected to stay with their teams even though they're out of it.
It was a disappointment, I think, because I mean, I certainly thought that, wow, trade deadlines earlier, it leaves 3 weeks of runway for buyout guys, and clearly teams have a need, starting with your local squad, the Warriors. I mean, even before this injury crisis, Golden State was hoping to make an addition in the buyout market. I think early in the season, you looked at the Warriors and you said, you know, their bench is better. They're more dynamic than they were. Nick Young, Caspi, you know, they've got some interesting ways to go off the bench. And as the season's gone on, it hasn't played out that way. And I think even the Warriors feel as though they could use at least one more scorer off the bench, some more punch off the bench. The Warriors weren't able to find anyone in the buyout market. The Raptors weren't able to find anyone in the buyout market. Ditto for the Cavs. It just, there weren't that many players available. And, you know, now with what's going on in Golden State, with all these injuries, I think they feel it even more. And look, even Houston, who we thought did fantastic in the buyout market, you know, Joe Johnson's gotten off to a very slow start there. And, you know, will Joe Johnson and Brandon Wright ultimately make a contribution? We'll see. And you know, I think the buyout market in general, we, you know, in our jobs get excited about it because it's almost like, I mean, it's maybe like a, not quite a second trade deadline, but it's just, you know, the March 1st date for guys to be waived is always something that gets us excited, but just because it gives us another kind of transactional thing to focus on. But yeah, you didn't have the Brook Lopez's of the world or the Kentavious Caldwell Popes pushing to get out of their current situations. You know, Nerlens Noel in Dallas, I think people thought he'd be a guy to try to pursue a buyout if he didn't get traded, and now he's back on the court for the Mavs. So I can't really pinpoint exactly why it wasn't as robust as we were hoping. All I do know is that there were multiple contenders out there who wanted to do something and couldn't. But then I think we also have to ask, do we overrate the buyout market? How often do the buyout guys really make a difference? I think if a buyout guy maybe wins you one game in the playoffs, you're probably happy.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, PJ Braun is the classic example on that 08 Celtics hitting a couple of jumpers late to win that game seven in 2008 over the Cavs. He was instrumental there. But yeah, you'd be hard pressed maybe to find, you know, the Warriors got Matt Barnes last year. He didn't really contribute in the playoffs, but I thought he was helpful in that late season run that they went on when it was
That's the kind of wildness we enjoy at the buyout market when the Warriors commit to Jose Calderon and then an injury comes up and then they have to reverse course. I mean, it was awful for Calderon. You know, Jose Calderon is one of the most like human beings that I've ever encountered in all my time covering the league. And, you know, that was awful for him. Here he thinks he's going to end up with a championship team, and the Warriors, because of an injury, have to turn around and say, no, we're signing a small forward instead.
He did get an extra $500K for his trouble or something. I mean, they signed him to the rest of the season contract and then immediately waived him. So he got at least something, it seemed like. Although I'm sure he had to give up a little with the Lakers. How much exactly escapes me.
Let's ask our friends on Twitter. We need to come up with what's the all buyout team? It's way too early for both of us to think of that off the top of their head. Oh, send in your tweets. Tell us, help us, help us. PJ Brown's the captain. Help us compile the all buyout.
Yeah, no, and the Sixers really remade their whole bench, I think, which they just so desperately needed some shooting. So that those guys could maybe help them out. We'll see where
Bellinelli's excellent. And he's, I think it's safe to say that Golden State, that's a guy that would have helped them, but he deemed Philly a better situation. Look, Marco Bellinelli's going to be a free agent, and these guys want to play. They don't want to, you know, they don't necessarily want to go somewhere where they might play a game and sit out three. I mean, in Philadelphia, Marco Bellinelli's going to get a chance.
Another place I wanted to talk about here is Charlotte, who is really, you know, was really in the news late January with the potential for Kemba Walker to be traded. Then Michael Jordan comes out and says, no, you know what, he's not going to be traded. Perhaps it's not a coincidence that shortly thereafter, the Rich Choate was reported that he will not return to the team with the expiration of his contract this summer. Let's start there. Why do you think they are moving on from Rich Choate? Did it have anything to do with this Walker thing? Was it the overall performance? Was it just not getting along with Michael Jordan? Like, what do you think it was?
Well, the timing is, I don't have an explanation for the timing because, Rich was in the last year of his deal. Why they decided to do it now in March midstream is just weird. I don't know if it's speaking to, they just reacted to the fact that people were connecting the dots and it leaked that, he wouldn't be back. He wouldn't be retained at season end. Look, the Hornets, it is a mess right now. So the fact that they would make a change isn't terribly surprising. But the fact that, Mitch Kupchak has emerged as the number one choice. I covered Mitch for a long, long time in Los Angeles, and I know he badly wants another opportunity. The way things ended with the Lakers was messy, to say the least. But
yeah. How much of that do you put on him? How much do you put on Jim Buss?
I mean, you have to. I mean, he has to be culpable for some of it. And I you could understand why the Lakers would want to make a dramatic reset. I mean, they're in the worst run that they've ever had as a franchise. Yeah. So, nobody is guaranteed a job forever. Mitch was with the franchise for a long, long time, and I'm sure he would tell you that he does have to take some of the blame there. But I mean, he didn't have the ultimate say. I mean, kind of the power structure was always murky with Jim Buss around. But it's more to me the fact that, the fact that Jordan is already linked with him because the whole North Carolina thing. I mean, if they end up doing a broader search, I think that would look a lot better. If it's just handed to Mitch Kupchak, people are going to be up in arms about that, thinking, why is Michael just going with his North Carolina buddy? But, I wrote about this in a recent newsletter because a Hornets fan asked, why aren't the Hornets considering Sam Hinkie? And to me, they are a franchise that really needs an out of the box thinker like Sam. I don't know if they could get Sam because
their box is pretty small too. I mean, it's North Carolina and like Jordan cronies basically. Although I guess to me that's not fair to Cho, who was someone who had a fairly forward reputation when he was hired by them 8 years ago. It's amazing to think that it was that long ago. But you're saying about Sam though.
Yeah, Sam, from everything I know about Sam, and I think he's basically said as much by now, he's going to be selective. He's not just going to jump back in. And I don't even, I have no evidence to suggest that Charlotte would even consider him. But I don't know. I hope Sam gets back in the league. I think it's a better league when he's in it. And, obviously things did not end in Philadelphia the way he wanted to. And I would like to see Charlotte do something bold like that and just try to go in a completely different direction than they've been. Because, all those tough roster choices that we talked about the last time we got together, they're nothing's changed. They're still facing all of them.
Yeah. It's not fantastic. Hinkie to Charlotte would be a huge surprise to me. I mean, you mentioned that they want someone outside the box. And I think for Sam, while it ended poorly in Philadelphia, perhaps in part because ownership blanched a little bit, in part because of the optics of some of the stuff, maybe with Jahlil Okafor, for example. The optics of, say, that Michael Carter Williams trade, even though that turned out to be a fantastic trade from the moment it was made, just like, oh my God, he's taking again. He's trading away even this one guy. We experienced all this pain to get and blah, blah. When he went in, it was a great situation for him, right? I mean, he had completely convinced the owners to follow his plan. They built this whole new practice facility that he deserves a ton of credit for, and to the point where, ESPN's writing articles on how awesome their food is there and stuff like that, although I forget how much exactly the Colangelos have contributed to that as well. Given, I know Brian Colangelo has pretty good taste in restaurants. He might be part of that too, but it doesn't seem like that's the organization that's going to get Sam Hinkie. I mean, who do you think might be, if we think of maybe the GM openings that could come available in the next year or so, that might be willing to take a chance on Hinkie, given how divisive he was in his first stint?
Yeah, the thing is, it's like he's not a divisive person if you know him.
His public perception.
Right. And, look, he's going to have to change that somehow if he wants to come back. And look, he made mistakes too. And some of those picks did not work out clearly. So it's not like he, in retrospect, retrospect is seen as this untouchable genius who everything he tried in Philly worked.
Yeah. Well, he would tell you that the whole point of his strategy is knowing that not every one of those picks is going to work out.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the uncertainty with the modern day draft, that even if you have multiple top five picks, that doesn't guarantee you anything either. I mean, it might take four to make two or three to make two. So I don't know who is going to be the team that goes for him. You know, Sacramento showed interest a year and a half ago. Sacramento showed some real interest, and there were some talks, didn't go anywhere. That is such a volatile situation, Sacramento, that I don't get the vibe that they really had any chance of convincing Sam that was the place to launch his comeback. But somebody will step up, and somebody will say this guy should be brought back into the league. I don't subscribe to the theory that says we will never see him as a GM again, but it's hard in this conversation to say, yes, I think Team X, that hasn't made itself clear yet.
Yeah, you know, and some of the teams that you might have felt, hey, people could be in trouble, for example, the Pelicans, looks like they're going to make the playoffs now. You know, they'll probably be, you know, that maybe that earns Dell Demps some more time, especially since it hasn't been the most proactive ownership situation there in terms of moving on from the front office. I mean, Dell's been fighting for his job since the day he got it. It really seems like, you know, there aren't necessarily, I mean, maybe Memphis, you know, especially if the new ownership takes over there. Have you heard anything on that, by the way, of like what's going on with the Steve Kaplan, like, I forget what like the term of art is for the
buy sell provision.
Yes, thank you.
It hasn't, we're waiting for the outcome to see. I mean, obviously, if there's new ownership, I think there would be sweeping change there if Robert Parra was no longer owner of the team. If Robert Parra stays owner of the team, it's much harder to predict what they'll do, because I think he's so unpredictable and, you know, another owner that leaves you scratching your head time and time again. So, chances are we'll see a GM change or two in the offseason. But after the coaching quiet that we had last offseason with no changes, which was basically unprecedented, the focus when the season ends is going to be on coaching change, because there are going to be 3, 4, 5, 6, how many ever there's, you know, we're going to see some act.
What do you make of these recent comments by Tom Gores in Detroit that Stan Van Gundy is a team player and we're evaluating things? What do you make of that?
I think that's everyone in the league is kind of looking at Detroit and saying, how broad will the change be? I mean, they're going to miss the playoffs. The Blake Griffin gamble to this point has not worked. You have to assume that at the least Stan Van Gundy will lose his front office power. I think I reported about a month ago that, you know, the rumblings are out there that Arn Tellem, the longtime power agent who's been running the business side with Detroit for the last 2-3 years, that he would take over the basketball side of things. I mean, those rumblings are even louder now. So, you know, will it become a full-blown coaching change? I mean, certainly if you're Stan Van Gundy and you read those Tom Gores quotes, there doesn't seem to be a lot of optimism there that Stan's going to be retained. But by the same token, you know, Stan has said over and over that this is his last stop. If he loses his job, he'll be fine. Come find me on my lake. And, you know, Stan's a different cat. I don't think that's just talk. I think he would be fine if they tell him, you know what, we're going to go in a different direction. And let's face it, I mean, the Pistons are a disappointment this season. There's no way around it. I mean, they should be a playoff team, especially the way they started the season. So, there has to be changes there after they're 3 years into this.
Yeah, and really, it seems like now not that much closer to even being better, not to mention, you know, ever having a path to championship contention. So we've talked about a couple owners, Michael Jordan, Glenn Taylor. I want to ask you just in general, because Danny and I, for our Stitcher Premium effort, did ownership rankings a couple of weeks ago. But for your money, not necessarily, you know, who's a good owner, who's a bad owner, but who do you hear as being the most active owners? The ones who are like, all right, they really have to approve things. Or if stuff gets taken to them, it's like, you know what, I'm not going to go with that recommendation. I'm going to go with my gut. Obviously, Mark Cuban would fall into that category maybe more than anyone else. But who are some of the others that you just hear more about? It's like, all right, these guys are just really active more in the day-to-day, and maybe even, you know, contradicting some of their some of the personnel that they've hired at times.
It's probably easier to come up with a list who's less active. I remember, you know, I was covering the Mavs when Cuban arrived. This is most years. And he would constantly say to any of the media around the team, I just paid $280 million for this thing, and you sports writers want me to sit on the side. No way. And I think almost all of the owners who've come into the league, you know, since Mark have had that same mindset. And I suppose you can't really blame them when we're talking that kind of money, because, you know, the prices have more than quadrupled. I mean, any team that sold now would go for over $1 billion. So, you know, it's easy for us on the side to say, hey, just sit out and let the basketball people handle it. But, you know, owners aren't getting involved to not be involved. I mean, they want to, you know, it's their money. They're spending a lot of it and they're going to be involved. And it's really the teams that can work best with their owners that have the most success, because it's just an unavoidable reality.
Yeah. Maybe we should answer the opposite question then of, you know, which owners,
like San Antonio is a team where, you know, Greg Popovich and RC Buford have always been given immense leeway to run the team. You know, with the Lakers, you know, I think, you know, Jeannie Buss is another one who's really tried to, you know, she doesn't try to insert herself into the basketball discussion. She tries to let the basketball people do their thing. And that's another one where I think in retrospect, she felt like maybe she should have been more active during the Jim Buss, Mitch Kupchak, during their last couple of years together, because things weren't going well, but she tried to stay out of it to let the quote basketball people handle it, and it didn't go well, and that's why she made such drastic changes. So there are still a few places where, you know, ownerships take, you know, really take a back seat.
Yeah. Utah comes to mind for sure. I think that their ownership is probably an underrated one over the years.
Yeah, no question. But yeah, I mean, it'll just, you know, we'll get to the point where there will be none, because, you know, I think Mark Cuban has been that kind of became the new template. And when you think of all the different owners that have come to the league in the nearly two decades since, I mean, they're like him.
Well, they're like him perhaps in wanting to make the decisions. I don't know that they're like him in the sense that they actually, you know, get that immersed in basketball operations the way he does. I mean, I think I wouldn't say all of them, but many of these guys are really smart guys. You know, if they really, but it's a question of, you know, you want to make the decision, but you're not necessarily putting the time in. And I think for me, when we talk about GMs, maybe one of the underrated things for a GM is, can you actually convince your owner to do what you think needs to be done? I mean, obviously having the right ideas is great. And can you help control your owner's worst impulses and just, you know, kind of wheedle them around a little bit, convince them to say, hey, you know what, like, this is the best path, or no, you know, we can't trade that guy, or, you know, getting to 48 wins, that's really not what's important right now. You know, that I think is an underrated aspect of being a good GM.
Yeah, no question. I mean, how many times do we hear about trades that collapse when the GM will say, okay, I have to take this to my own. I mean, that's always the key step. My owner won't let me do this. I mean, those are lines you hear all the time.
All right, a couple more things that we wanted to talk about. You had a discussion with Anthony Davis a couple of weeks ago, and he had some interesting comments about DeMarcus Cousins' free agency and what maybe a little bit even about his own eventual fate in New Orleans.
Yeah, I mean, he says he thinks DeMarcus is going to stay. He says he's going to be very involved. And, you know, I've been around the Pelicans a fair bit over the years, and I've never gotten a sense of unhappiness with Anthony Davis. I think he really sees it as his team, his city. He wants to bring success there. One of the things I think is most impressive about the guy, I've never, you know, maybe he does it in private, I've never heard him once complain about our roster isn't good enough, I need more help. I mean, he puts it on himself. And, you know, I think most observers would say, no, man, I mean, you can't possibly do more than you do. But they've only made one playoff appearance in his career. And he says, you know, he essentially told me that that's on me. And I, you know, I think that would be a minority opinion. I don't think anybody's looking at Anthony Davis saying he didn't do enough, because the guy is, again, a huge part of Team Unicorn. But I love his attitude. And he really takes ownership of what goes on there in New Orleans. It's just yet another reason to like that guy.
So when you say, all right, you know, I want to have success here, you know, what do you think the standard for that is, though? I mean, because to me, and perhaps the designated veteran extension, which he is well on pace to qualify for here, could be a factor in this, because they can pay him a lot more money and they can pay it sooner, obviously, than could happen if he gets to free agency. But for him, like, what is the standard of success? Is it, you know, okay, we're making the playoffs consistently? Is it top four seed in the West? Is it true championship contention? I mean, because at some point, you know, you maybe start thinking about greener pastures, even if, you know, as you mentioned publicly, he's had this, he's been towing the company line as well as he has been.
Look, and it's the same thing with Giannis Antetokounmpo. One of the most remarkable things about Giannis to me is how this guy from Athens has fallen in love with Milwaukee to the degree that he has. You know, you think of Athens as this cosmopolitan European city, and, you know, he ends up in Milwaukee and is Mr. Milwaukee and wants to win in Milwaukee. But with anyone, if you don't get to a championship level, of course, then you're going to look at your situation. I mean, these are, you know, Anthony Davis, Giannis, these are, you know, top 10, top 5 players in this league. Those players need to be competing for championships. So if it doesn't happen with their current teams over a period of years, whether they want to look elsewhere or not, the drumbeat will be sounded for them. And are other teams going to stop coming after Anthony Davis because he says how much he loves it in New Orleans? Absolutely not. That phone is always going to ring, and New Orleans can say no 100 times, and the Boston Celtics are going to think on the 101st try, we're finally going to convince them. So, you know, if those teams don't win, I'm sure those guys will take a look around. And look, let's face it, you know, Anthony Davis had a recent sit down with Rachel Nichols where, you know, Rachel, I think, relayed the story about Paul Pierce saying how Garnett told him that he wished he'd push for a trade sooner. And Anthony Davis admitted that does make you think. I mean, he's not going to, I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't expect him to sit there in perpetuity if the Pelicans are a first round out or a second round team. I mean, eventually you got to win.
Well, and it's going to be very interesting to me, the designated veteran extension. How much does that play in that Giannis situation, in that AD situation? You know, I think we would both say, although it's probably too early to say with Giannis, but that neither of those teams look like they're on the path to really being in championship contention, despite having, you know, guys who are top 10, top 5 players. Plug, by the way, we actually did our rankings of the top 10 players in the NBA yesterday, if you want to go back and listen to that. But that's going to be such an interesting question to me of whether is that money enough to get the guys to stay when it wasn't before. That certainly was the purpose of it. Maybe what we'll see is the guys agree to that extension, get their money, and then once they can be traded, they ask for a trade. But then your problem is you don't have the leverage to get traded where you want to go because you're under contract for 5 more years, basically. If you sign that extension, you wait a year and then you can be traded a year after when it kicks in and you got 5 years left or 4 years left in the case of some of these guys.
Those guys can give Blake Griffin a call and see how that works out.
Yeah, no, exactly, right? Like, so there's a concern there. And I mean, at the levels of money that we're talking about, these guys will already be coming off of max contracts. Is there a chance that they would just give up that money and try and win? You know, how much? It's just an individual question, and I'm not sure that getting that money earlier, I mean, unless it's a guy with significant injury concerns, is going to make that big of a difference. That's my hunch, but we'll see. You know, each individual obviously is going to be different.
Yeah, again, we're hunching here, but those two guys in particular, if we talk about AD and Jan, I mean, they both have left a very clear impression that they want to win where they are, and I think we can safely assume, as safely as you can, that they're going to give their current team every chance to make it work. And look, the Pelicans were going to be as fascinating a playoff team as there was. If Marcus Cousins doesn't go down with the Achilles injury, you would have loved to see what the Pelicans could do in the playoffs, playing a style that nobody else plays and persisting with the two big men. And that, you know, those two figured it out pretty well, but it was the group around them that started playing well. Now, would Jrue Holiday be able to play this well if they still had Cousins out there? I don't know. But, you know, I think just you really want to see, I want to see Cousins stay. I want to see them get all these guys healthy and just see what this group's ceiling is, because they're doing it differently and that's fun. I want to see something different.
Last question I want to talk about here, the tanking epidemic. I mean, I forget what the record is now. The Kings actually won one of these games yesterday, but and so did Orlando at home against the Bucks and the Kings against the Heat last night, although they almost blew a 10-point lead in the last 5 minutes of the game. But the tanking eight, they really, unless they're playing each other, seem to have very little chance of winning games. The Bulls have been chastised now. The Mavs have been fined $600,000 for Mark Cuban, acknowledging that tanking would be better for the franchise. They're changing the lottery rules next year. It's just, what are your thoughts? What are you hearing about now, this epidemic that people complain about, but may in fact still be necessary to the operation of the league to give bad franchise franchise's hope.
It's so complicated. And look, the league really clearly just hates hearing about it. They're going to hate that we're talking about it. They just, the word just makes them so uncomfortable. You know, I think there is a segment of fans that aren't bothered by it at all. But the problem in the NBA is you almost have two sets of fans for every team. You have the diehards who listen to knuckleheads like us go on for 45 minutes and just cannot get enough. And those fans, if they're a fan of one of the eight teams, or should we stretch it to nine now with where the Knicks are, they want their teams to lose. They want to get as high in the lottery as they can, but that's often a different crowd from the crowd that's going to the game, because NBA tickets are expensive and teams are trying to bring in, you know, they're trying to sell tickets that, what do they average, $100 or more now for an average ticket. I've lost track of what the average NBA ticket costs. So, you know, that's almost like a different fan base that you're working on, because so many diehards can't even afford, you know, college kids or whatever can't afford to go to NBA games. So teams have subsets of their own fans that they're trying to please, the ones that want to be entertained, the ones that, you know, scream at their team when they win and are furious with their team when they win. You know, I'm sure you interact with those kind of fans on Twitter. I mean, there's lots of people out there who want their, you know, Mavericks fans that want their team to lose every game from here on out. That's just, you know, fans are smart. They know. And then it's interesting in Dallas because you've got Harrison Barnes and Dirk Nowitzki coming out and saying, you know, losing on purpose is terrible. It's a bad culture. You can't just expect to lose for 2-3 years and expect the guys who are doing the losing not to be affected. And that's totally true. But the reality is that getting a top three pick is so potentially good for these teams.
I mean, look at Philly. Like, if their success this year can't put to bed this, like, culture argument against tanking, like, I'm not sure what's going to.
But I think part of it is that Embiid and, you know, Simmons missed his whole first season and Embiid wasn't on the floor so much. So in their case, the two best players, they weren't part of, they were part of it, but not really as, they didn't as acutely feel the losing.
Yeah.
I don't know if it puts the culture argument to bed because.
Yeah. Well, know, but they painful. Got like a Rob Covington and a TJ McConnell. I mean, those, I think, like, if you get guys who have, even in the tanking process, if you get guys who have good character, who are going to play hard, you know, I'm not sure that that's going to go away over the course of a couple of years. I mean, you're able to kind of churn through the roster and find the guys who are willing to play hard and can keep your culture good, even if you're losing, perhaps. That would be my counter argument there.
I mean, the reality is this is basketball, and one guy can make such a difference in this sport that the incentive to tank is always going to be there. And I can only speak for myself. I don't think the system has been that bad, because if teams want to tank, you only have a 25% chance of getting the first pick. That's going to go down next season. So there are plenty of risks for the tanking teams with the system the way it is. It's really the perception that bothers the league and you know, the suggestion that it cuts through the integrity of the game. And it's such a complicated mess, and it's so hard to fix. And that's why there's been no fix, because it's the one and done rule. Everyone's focused on that and lasered in on that. And even on the college side of the game, it seems to me now like they want change is going to happen there. You know, everybody sees that the system has major issues, and everybody's kind of invested in trying to fix it. And the tanking issue is way more complicated to me.
Yeah, and you know, I think the league, wrongly in my opinion, they seem more concerned with the idea of like multiple season tanking, kind of like what Philly did. And you know, the Bulls kind of are on that path a little bit. The Hawks kind of are on that path a little bit. In terms of their moves from the start of the year, you know, I thought Phoenix maybe thought they'd be a little bit better. Maybe Orlando thought they'd be a little bit better. Dallas, maybe, who knows? But it seems like the league's more concerned about that. Whereas what's more insidious to me is just like teams kind of, all right, we're gonna Dennis Schroeder's in the middle of a 20-point game here in the third quarter, and oh, we better sit him down because we're playing the Suns and we can't afford to lose them. You know, that's the type of stuff that really kind of gets me a little bit. But it's, I think in general, you're right. You know, especially on a one season basis, it doesn't really end up mattering that much. You know, I mean, you're just, you know, for a 25% or an 18% chance, I agree with you. It's smart to lose, but you know, it doesn't always work out for you either. I mean, just look at how bad the Suns last year.
The system punishes these teams plenty. Like, if that's the path a team wants to take, okay, go ahead and take it. But you're not guaranteed anything. There's a 75% chance you're not going to get the pick you want. So go ahead and do it. But the league clearly doesn't feel that way. And, you know, the perception bothers them greatly more and more and more every year. So it's, you know, one and done, tanking, playoff seeding. I mean, those are issues that are just going to keep coming up. But to me, I think the focus is going to be much more on the one and done and the tanking. I think the league sees those as much bigger problems than trying to change the playoff seeding format.
Yeah, and I would love to talk to you more about one and done and what really the... try to put something a little more concrete on what these proposals are out there, because I thought some of the comments lately have been pretty illuminating. But we are out of time. We'll save that for your next run here. We appreciate it. Mark Stein of the New York Times coming on, as always, at this early moment for in the day for us NBA types. Hopefully we managed to muddle through well enough here, though. So we will talk to you all next time. Till then. Thanks to Coca-Cola and Powerade for sponsoring today's program. During this time of year, NCAA March Madness, know you're going to be sitting there watching the games. Even if you're not taking off Thursday and Friday, you're definitely going to be home watching them at night and all day Saturday and Sunday. Swing by Walmart before every round and stock up on Coca-Cola, Coke Zero Sugar, and Powerade. Before the next game tips off, NCAA March Madness isn't just one game, it's a whole tournament. Make sure you're ready. Refresh every round by heading to Walmart. Pick up Coca-Cola, Coke Zero Sugar, and Powerade.